have their names here, but that's not my business to introduce them. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. Good morning, honorable members. My name is Sidwell Mofokeng. I'm the Chief Executive Officer. With me here is Janet Davis, who is the Sector Skills Planning Manager. And next to her is Mr. Elias Mnyakeng, who is the HR and Corporate and Communications Manager. Thank you very much. I think the Chair... Yes. We have got presence in six provinces, service in nine. Okay, thank you. Okay. The Chair has slightly introduced why we are here. We did a presentation in October, and there were areas which could not be adequately covered, which the honorable member felt that they needed more input, more discussion, more clarity on. And really, today's session, we see it as an interactive session, that we see it as being in a workshop mode, just to develop an understanding of what we are all about as a seeker. And generally, what we've found is that structures and the general populace at large are not so au fait about what seekers are all about, what they do, what they don't do. And the only time they hear about a seeker is only when there's a negative thing. And unfortunately, seekers continually are talked about by bad publicity, and also in areas where seekers, there are areas of weaknesses, as is in the current case with Fidentia. So we're coming in this context not to talk about Fidentia. We're not part of that, but to continue where we left off. Just about who our stakeholders are, in terms of the Skills Development Act, sector education training authorities are organizations that must be constituted by employer and labor. In our sector, we also included DPLG as a strategic partner to the CETA, as the relevant line department responsible for local government, as a stakeholder, though they are not an employer in the sense of the Labor Relations Act as a registered employer. It is important for us to, maybe as one of the 23 seekers, explain the context within which we work, and then the legislative framework where we get our mandate. We are a public Schedule 3 public entity under the Minister of Labour, who is the executive authority. We are established in terms of the Skills Development Act, which defines how a seeker should be constituted. But because we work in local government, we have also had to take note of the context within which we work. And local government being a very complex environment, I myself, having been in the sector for 23 years, and I'm happy to see that the Mohasa there, we served together in some of the structures previously, that our seeker is unique in that sense, because it serves a sphere of government, which is a distinct sphere by definition of the Constitution. So we also have to take cognizance of the environment within which municipalities work. And there are a myriad of legislation that impact the functions of local government. And the last time we kept count, it was approximately 106 pieces of legislation that impact the functions of local government. Our mandate is primarily founded in the Skills Development Act and the South African Qualifications Act. We have to ensure in terms of SAQA Act that the provision of education and training in the sector is provided by accredited training providers, that provision of education is of quality, that it is relevant, and we have to ensure that we would undertake the responsibility of quality assuring that provision. We also have to support municipalities in terms of what we call a core package of legislation for municipalities, and the one being the constitution itself, defining the mandate of local government, section 152, the Municipal Structures Act about the various structures of local government, the Municipal Systems Act, the Municipal Finance Management Act, and the Rating Act. We think that is the core pieces of legislation that drive the function of local government. Because we are a steel development entity, whatever we do in supporting the sector must accord with the overall objectives of government, the National Skills Development Strategy, including the latest being Schedule 7 of ASKISA. We have to make sure that in implementing skills development strategy, the issue of relevance applies, but it is applied in the context of the National Skills Development Strategy. Janet will get more into detail about those aspects. And all the other three blocks remain. Janet will get into detail about that. What we had to do for us to undertake and fulfill this mandate in supporting local government, we had to interrogate our own capacity as an organization to discharge our responsibility of supporting local government. And as we engage today, we expect a number of interesting discussions to ensue, but also a number of interesting questions to be raised around some of the things we would be presenting this morning. We've had to look at streamlining our internal policies and system. Our area of weakness was the governance. It still remains generally an area of weakness in all sectors, the area of governance. But there is a concerted effort within our structure to comply with Section 52 of the Public Finance Management Act, also the Code on Good Corporate Governance, the King Code. We had to beef up our marketing and communication because people did not know what we are busy with, what we are all about, what we have done, what is it that we are not doing. And of course, look at ensuring that we have presence in all provinces, and where we have provinces, we are busy now increasing our capacity. Having done this, you've noted that we've increased the delivery of training in the sector. You'd note that there is quality provision of education and training, and the general increased capacity within the local government sector in terms of training. Janet will speak to the sector skills needs in terms of the SSP review, the document that's before you, which is our baseline document that informs our key projects and programs, and some of which have been highlighted in purple. There's a block, a strategic project on municipal finance, on ABET, on SDF training, our priority learning and skills program implementation, our priority qualifications and learnership, and the increased quality and quantity of workplace participation. You'll see also, in terms of the statistics that we'll present, the increase in participation by municipalities in the skills development area. And of course, the question of quality assurance. We're ensuring, and the Honorable Member Mshudulu is quite passionate about quality, that the provision of quality training in the workplace is something that we promote. That not everybody can profess to go to local government and offer training that leads to nothing, that cannot be measured, that cannot be quantified. And in that area, we're increasing compliance as much as we can. So, Chairperson, I just wanted to open with those three slides by way of a remark, taking a cue from what we are here to do this morning. I'm going to ask Ms. Davis to continue with the presentation.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. As the CEO introduced, the local government CETA, in common with all other CETAs, is obliged to produce a sector skills plan and is obliged to update this annually.
Just a quick question. You didn't bring us a summary of your survey?
The slides, in a sense, present you with the summary of the survey.
You don't
the entire document has been circulated.
Okay.
What we can do, I've got a limited set of slides here for my own purposes, but perhaps we could make copies and distribute them quickly.
That would be nice. Can you coordinate that, please? That's okay.
Okay. What I have done as well, in terms of the presentation, I haven't presented endless tables, I haven't presented endless lists of scarce skills. Those you will find in your document. What I have rather done is taken the approach of highlighting those issues which are placing strains, shall we say, on local governments as organizations and local governments as service delivery agencies. And how many of those are linked with the struggles around the skills, the upskilling of municipalities, etc. And attempted to identify exactly what those constraints are. I mean, for instance, if you take an example of Nelson Mandela Metro, just as one example, they have approximately 16.5 million rand per annum to spend on training. Of their total staff of sort of 6,500 people, they identify exactly 10% of them to undergo training, which leaves you with a training spend of approximately 32,000 rand per person per annum, which is a huge amount of money. Now, whether that training all has that kind of level of impact, whether, of course, those resources are spent as they say they are, is quite another matter. Okay. However, just in terms of providing you with the background, there are, as you know, 23 CETAs, each of which has responsibility for covering a particular economic sector. Now, those are governed by or defined by the SIC codes, the Standard Industrial Classification Codes. The local government CETA scope of coverage now is concentrated entirely on local government. Water resource management has been removed from our brief. So we include all municipalities. We also include municipal utilities, organizations dealing with local government, and under that last SIC code, we also cover traditional leaders and traditional leadership institutions. And then again, a minimum of 50% of all skills funding flows back to employers. Of all the skills funding that is distributed to CETAs, flows directly back to those employers who actually comply with the legislation. Which means that as a CETA, you've in fact got limited capability, shall we say, to influence the kind of training that employers conduct. You can guide it, but you cannot enforce it. In terms of the Skills Levy Act, each employer is obliged to pay 1% of payroll. And there again, it's incredibly important to realize that while skills development can be delivered, I mean, can be guided by national policy, it remains the responsibility of individuals. In this case, the municipality. If they do not plan their training and if they do not participate in the national skills development strategy, the CETA itself is very limited in terms of how it can intervene. Every employer in local government is obliged to submit a workplace skills plan. The workplace skills plan provides the strategic training planning document for the institution. In our case, we endeavour to get municipalities to link theirs to the IDPs, to their own particular IDPs, and beyond that to the provincial growth and development strategies. Whether this happens or not is a moot point. In certain cases, yes, it does. However, if you take, again, Nelson Mandela Metro as an example, and I'm sorry to keep harping on that example, but it's, well, actually, Tommy's London, so perhaps that's why I'm using PE as an example.
That's the energy.
But that was a very long time ago. I haven't bothered to analyze the world of vomit, but I'll keep quiet about the analysis of Butler City's workplace skills plan. But Nelson Mandela is a very good example. It's because it's a large employer. Their training objectives are stated as being, now bear in mind this is a workplace skills plan, finding employment for unemployed graduates, encouraging sport as an employment opportunity of choice, developing a strategy around service delivery, and improving customer care. And those are their training objectives. Now, with objectives like that, quite obviously, there's no flow through into appropriate training that is being conducted. So there's actually very little emphasis, for instance, on training in technical areas. Although the Metro itself, in fact, has three training suites, but I'll get onto those in due course. Okay, and each CETA is responsible for ensuring the implementation of the National Skills Development Strategy within their sector and to identify key skills development interventions which will respond to government directives and policy imperatives and to sectoral needs. I think that perhaps the approach we should take, because there are some 27 odd slides, and by the end of it, probably, I'm conscious of the fact that you may feel bombarded. I can also go on at considerable length about this particular topic. So I think perhaps what we should do is, after every few, three or four slides, take a break and then maybe we can respond to questions. Perhaps that's the best way of actually doing it.
You are right, but also if you could, maybe not necessarily three or four, you must pace yourself that all those slides, you must key us into the highlights.
I thought.
So that you don't zero into every one of those issues at length, but a breath stroke would be helpful. Mm. And then we can zero in into those areas that we would like to enter into.
I think Janet has just highlighted, you know, what our mandate is, what is it that we need to do. However, we need to upfront say there are inherent structural problems in municipalities where there is a general lack of non-compliance by municipalities, not only with respect to skills development, but in a number of areas. And in this area, there are those inherent structural weaknesses, but we do have also mechanisms and strategies that we put in place to assist municipalities to comply. The other problem that we have is that we do not have a legal mandate to enforce some of the things. We can only help to a point. However, these are issues that we're taking up with DPLG in terms of revisiting Section 68 of the Systems Act. And I must also point out that we have now signed a memorandum of understanding with DPLG, spelling out a framework of how we need to interact jointly around these issues. So as we go along, we'll just highlight what are the structural weaknesses, maybe what is the intervention that we're putting in place.
We're taking questions yet or not?
Yeah, Chair. Actually, I approve of this because it makes the thing easier to talk. The fact that local government is generally non-compliant is a given, but I'm interested in the statutory environment within which that's allowed to take place. I mean, if you take the MM and the accounting officer responsibilities in respect of Systems Act, let alone the Finance Management Act. And given the fact that they're compelled to pay 1% of payroll, but they get 50% back if they comply, what statutory obligation is there in terms of a fiduciary responsibility for them to comply with that in order to receive the 50% back? I mean, if you don't make a submission and get 50% back, is that not wasteful expenditure at one level? I mean, is there any legal compliance which would compel municipalities, and the MM in particular, to comply with the processes that are required by law?
Before you answer that, my story is let the evidence speak. You see, you made a general remark about compliance, and Peter has snatched on it and says general non-compliance of local government. Yes, that's what I'm pointing out. I'm saying that he made a statement, and there's no way it would escape you. You snatched on it. So I want you to provide us with evidence. I'm interested specifically because I know. That, for example, your debt of submission, okay? But not only submission, but the other part is having submitted implementation plan, okay? And thirdly, the question of what amount stays unclaimed because of that. Because that's an area that when I last was there, if I may say so, when I was there.
Yes.
Was a particularly problematic one in the Free State. Only Mangaung drew any money, and the rest were not. So that's the sort of thing that I would like to get. On the basis of that evidence, we may or may not go towards Peter's lovely conclusions.
I'd like to ask a question on
the Okay, if I'll respond to that, and I will contradict partly. This thing. In fact, as seasons go, we have a relatively high compliance rate. About 75% of the municipalities submit workplace bills. There are only about 13 of them that are not paying levy to the local government sector. We suspect that the local receivers of revenue are perhaps instrumental in sowing a bit of confusion on that. There's a provision in the Skills Development Act which allows the Minister of Labour to exempt a local authority from the payment of the skills levy. Now, no local authorities actually have been exempted. Firstly, they need to apply for exemption. Secondly, as a CETA, we would need to support it, and I doubt whether we would feel inclined to do so. It's by no means an automatic exemption. However, for instance, in the case of Bushbuck Ridge, they went to go and pay their levy. They were told by their local receiver's office, no, you're a local authority, you don't pay skills levy. So there are those sorts of issues which become quite difficult. Particularly when small municipalities are attempting to comply. In terms of the amount of mandatory grants that municipalities receive back that they actually spend on training is an entirely different matter. And I would imagine, I mean, it's very difficult to assess, but if perhaps 20 to 25% of what flows back into the sector is spent on training, and is spent on appropriate training, that would be quite a lot. I suspect it would also make a considerable difference to service delivery in the sector. You do find that there are notable instances where quite large employers do, for some reason, not comply with the legislation. Generally, it's often by kind of oversight, the submission deadlines for workplace skills plans and that are now very tight. They are regulated or gazetted. And it's not within our power as a CESA to grant any kinds of extensions. The workplace skills plan is a stakeholder-driven document, so it should be signed off by the training committee, which should be present and functional in every local authority. And, that is the key. For instance, we are currently sitting with an example of a Tekweni Metro, which were unable to sign, to get their WSP signed and submitted to us as a CESA in time. They stand to forfeit approximately between 8 and 9 million rand.
What?
Yeah.
That's my question now. Is the MM accountable for failing his judicial responsibility?
Okay.
Yeah, all right, Okay.
I think the other area where we're struggling with non-compliance, it's either a decision, particularly in the area of municipal entities. Or
just to interrupt you there, because I think this is crucial, and for fear of generalization, that when we speak about compliance, you in your presentation, you've been breaking it down but not saying so. Okay? So we would like you to explicitly do so. Say they comply in terms of submission, but then do not comply with ABCD, for example. So that disaggregation is helpful because it provides a more specific and appropriate understanding as you are speaking. Yeah.
Okay. There are two issues. The regulations have been amended, maybe in terms of compliance. One, previously we used to pay disperse levies back to municipalities on submission of a WSP. We would give them a percentage, and then they would give us an implementation report, would give them the balance. And that was problematic because they would then get their first 25% then in terms of funding regulation, and that's the last time they ever do anything about it, and resulting in municipalities forfeiting a lot of their levy grants because they did not implement their own WSPs. With a change in regulation, and we came back earlier and we explained what we've done to ensure that municipalities submit but also implement their WSPs, because it's not in our interest to withhold skills levy money which must be dispersed back to the sector. With a change in the regulations, a municipality has to submit a workplace skills plan for the current year and a training report for the previous year simultaneously. So that's one way of ensuring that municipalities comply. If they submit a WSP, a workplace skills plan, without a training report, it is an incomplete submission and we cannot disperse money back to them. So until such time that they give us a training report, they stand to forfeit that money. If comes the 31st of March, they haven't given us a training report, they may forfeit that money. We'll try to go back to the last slide where there's a clear breakdown in terms of the submission rate, in terms of WSP and the implementation. The second area, Chair, of non-compliance is where municipalities have entities, those entities, the municipality does not ensure that those entities, as Janet has explained in terms of the SIC code, that they pay levy to the correct SITA. They pay levy to all other SITAs except local government SITA. We can just also cite maybe a bad example, and which is not palatable for me. but I have to do it brutally frank. In the instance of Johannesburg, for instance, we were in the process with the Metro to make sure that Pick It Up is with us, Joburg Zoo, City Parks, JDA, JRA, Metrobus. In the instance of Metrobus, the council has been affected, or that entity Metrobus has been affected because part of the skills levy money is the money that went to Fidentia. Indirectly, you know, we are implicated, but not, because the levy was not received by us. But rightfully so, we're trying to reclaim that levy from Transport Sector, because we have an agreement with Johannesburg that those entities will come back within the fold of local government. But our guess is as good as yours that we may not, we're likely not to get that money from Transport Sector, and neither can we disperse it back to Joburg. So that area, it is an area of concern. I'm raising that, Chair, because we need 10% of that levy income to support the administration of the city, to increase that capacity to make an impact. And if the levy is going the wrong direction, it means our city would not be financially capacitated to have the ability to support municipalities adequately. Janet has highlighted the concern around Etegwin is one of the areas now where they're forfeiting money. But we do also have other municipalities like Umshatuza, a big employer, who stands to lose. And it might be an oversight, it might be also a question of bargaining the labor and employer issues in the workplace where there's no agreement that leads to that kind of non-compliance. But there are a myriad of factors. What is it that we are doing? We also realize that the level of non-compliance is as a result of a level of either ignorance or sense of no agency by senior management. Skills development has become an orphan child. We were quite grateful with the DPLG, with the introduction of the performance management system, that it is now municipalities are taking it upon themselves to ensure that in the performance contract of municipal managers, they include skills development. That's one way. But we also said at our discussion with DPLG, we're seeking to make amendment to Section 68 of the Systems Act, which vaguely speaks about the municipality having to undertake skills development by making an additional provision, but it says nothing. It doesn't say what happens if the municipality does not do that. So it's vaguely written. And we think from that point, the oversight department being DPLG could assist us. And part of the MOU was to try and deal with those issues, to say let's ensure that DPLG, who has oversight, will be able to implement or enforce certain things to ensure that municipalities comply. We have also signed, or in the process of signing MOUs with the MECs in the Free State, in the Northwest, in Gauteng, as part of our advocacy campaign and cooperation at the provincial level with MECs. And we've been invited to various fora where mayors and municipal managers are to come and raise and address these issues. And the provinces, those three provinces, have committed themselves to support the work that we're doing. So, yes, Chair, we do not want to single out certain municipalities, but the level of compliance, you're correct, varies in terms of at various levels.
National Skills Development Strategy are as follows. The vision is to develop skills for sustainable growth. Okay. Fine, shall I skip this slide then? I might even be able to skip that one. Okay. Just to say that in addition to monitoring skills development in the sector, collecting and dispersing levy, etc., each DSA is obliged to produce the sector skills plan, which covers the areas of skills need for their sector. It is essentially a labour market analysis, The sector skill plan is developed basically for 5-year period, but it's constantly updated. The process that we have used to develop ours, and I think that this kind of research process is important to just touch on it very briefly, because I think that it does give the document credibility, is that we've conducted a sector review during 2003-2004, which was quite an extensive research process, that we do an annual analysis of workplace skills plans that we receive in. Each year we send out a skill or conclude or conduct a scarce skills survey. So each municipality will receive a scarce skills questionnaire. We also conduct targeted focus research. We hold annual provincial workshops at which a number of these issues actually get raised in that workshop format. We then also make use of and share information with the Demarcation Board, with National Treasury, etc., and then there's the usual secondary sources reviews, etc. The main finding of the sector skills plan is, unsurprisingly, given the nature of our sector and the sector that we're working in, that legislation and policy imperatives are the main drivers of skills need. So skills need is not driven so much in our sector by advances in technology, changes in technology, etc., etc. It is firmly at the door of legislation and policy. That the introduction of new legislation frequently results in high levels of demand for particular skills which cannot be met by the available pools of skill in the labour market. And this is a crucial issue. For instance, we have the Municipal Property Rates Act, which is a very fine piece of legislation, except in it, it has a requirement for certified property valuers, which in itself is a good thing. However, there are only about 1,000 registered property valuers in this country. So just as the implementation of legislation should be costed in financial terms, so should legislation and policy be costed in terms of skills requirements. There is a move now to cost the implementation of legislation, but that tends to focus on financial considerations. One needs to ask the question, do we have the skills available within the sector to actually implement legislation and social policy as it is promulgated and so the as the policy gets developed? Okay, all right. And then just to say that, in relation to, for instance, Municipal Property Rates Act, what we have done in conjunction with the SA Council for the Valuers Profession and DPLG is we've actually embarked on a bursary and training program and internship program in conjunction with those partners. And just to say that that is a fairly typical example of the way that the local government sector responds to these emerging skills needs within the sector. So not all of our activities are done purely on our own initiatives, but are very often done in partnership with other key organizations. That staffing structures and organograms within local authorities are generally not linked to municipal functions, nor are they linked to service delivery demands. So you have a large number of very strange-looking organograms that you receive from municipalities We know this because the Workplace Skills Plan covers very briefly what the organization's organogram actually looks like. That the large-scale restructuring of municipalities post-2000 not only led to geographic and functional change, but to large-scale organizational change. And one might like to think that we are now sitting in 2007, I was about to say 2006, but 2007, that is in a sense past history, particularly as DPLG in fact made transformation grants available to municipalities. However, this is not the case. I mean, those sort of organizational transformation processes are still not concluded. This has resulted in a considerable mismatch between people occupying positions and the actual skills requirements of those posts. One of the key things has been the redeployment of individuals within municipalities, obviously rather than the sort of voluntary severance package retrenchment mode. So it is not inconceivable, for instance, to find that somebody who was previously working in municipal finances is now employed in technical services or some other such not necessarily directly related field. That this has resulted, and this mismatch of people in the post and the skills that they have, has resulted in the need for comprehensive skills audits within the sector. And here again, we are cooperating with DPLG on that. I'm going to shift to the next slide before I stop and take questions, because I think that the two flow on. In sort of financial terms, our contribution to the skills audit is approximately 10 million rand for this current financial year. In addition, there's a very limited capacity within human resource departments in local authorities. And one of the key things about a skills audit is that it will tell you the skills that you actually have in the sector, but it will not necessarily in and of itself tell you the skills that you need in the sector. And a few slides further on, there's some rather horrifying figures from the demarcation board, which suggests that the average employee to household served ratio is one employee to every 2,100 households. Now that is a national average, and it ranges from about one employee to 200 households in sort of metro, to 1 to 9,000, even 1 to 12,000 in some of your smaller cities, your more rural areas. Generally speaking, your areas which were in the old, your old homeland. And one of the central problems is that we've got very little to guide small municipalities, given this limited HR capacity. There's very little guidance given to local authorities around staffing requirements. We need to be in a position as a sector to be able to develop some kind of simple staffing formulas. For instance, something like, I don't know, but I mean, for every kilometer of dirt road, you should be employing one person in maintenance and one supervisor, and, you know. So that a municipality, an HR person can actually sit there and say, right, if this is the physical shape of my municipality, these are the services that I'm required to deliver, then I should be employing X number of people in these positions. And that is the kind of very detailed guidance which is not being given to the sector at the moment. That the human resources resource focus within local authorities tend to focus on issues of remuneration and industrial relations, that job descriptions are often poorly designed or non-existent, performance management is poorly implemented, and more central from our perspective is that human resource development and planning and skills development planning are viewed as being secondary to other HR issues, which are generally disciplinary in nature. That skills development facilitators, in our rush to first few slides, in terms of the legislation, each employer employing more than 50 people should designate a skills development facilitator. So essentially a workplace skills champion. In the case of local government, that person is a full-time municipal employee. However, they are often junior members of the HR department, they are often poorly capacitated, and they generally lack authority. If you are a junior HR clerk and you need to get skills development information from the manager in technical services, for instance, you're probably likely to get essentially if he says, please go away, I am busy, I cannot be bothered with that, you're not really in a position to be able to challenge him. And I say him because the majority of the people employed in the sector are men. But we shall get on to that. And there's a considerable breakdown on that in the document. I wish. And we will indeed, but it will take time. It will take time. The skills development facilitator is not viewed as part of the strategic planning team. Again, one of the key interventions that as a season we make each year is we train our skills development facilitators extensively. We have quarterly forums with them, organized on district level. We have training programs, unit standards-based, qualification-based training programs that we roll out for them. We develop manuals. We flood them with information. One of the key problems, though, is staff turnover. There is a very rapid through flow of skills in municipalities. So one constantly has to retrain people.
Just on the point of the SDF, one of the big problems we're experiencing is that in the IDP planning processes, SDFs are not even part of that process. So they're not even able to capture the skills needs required by the business imperative of the municipalities. So municipalities would develop an IDP, but they would not identify the kinds of skills they require to support the implementation of the IDP. And we've interrogated SDF and they said, we're not even considered, we don't even know what an IDP is. And you'll see that there's that disjuncture already in the key planning principles.
Okay, questions, yes. So, thank you, Chairperson. Yeah. Firstly, one must accept that their presentation triggers a lot of questions in terms of what is happening and what is not happening. And I think as a challenge, as we move forward, it will assist us as we engage. There's an issue which I just wanted to touch on, which I think you are doing best as you move, that we have passed many laws within local government. And there was about the time to raise exactly that. The challenges you face For instance, not because we were in Nelson Mandela over disaster management, but you also mentioned from the property rights deal, and I will be happy at all times you reflect exactly on the challenges you face, because the implementation of the laws, I mean, even with the Municipal Systems Act, you find it very difficult for municipalities to be seen coping with it in terms of how it has been structured. And the other one, my biggest worry in the presence of provincial local government at national, is a skill transfer between yourselves and the department. Because as monitors, and I'm raising this chairperson against the backdrop of the inconsistencies that we have because of the electoral process, that it is not easy to retain staff within local government, because as power changes from one hand to the other, people are just shifted like pawns, which again is a loss to your investment in terms of. So I'm trying to sensitize, I think, ourselves around the issue of stability between the CETA and the Department of Local Government at national, so that those gaps can be closed. Chairperson, the other thing also is your the other area of concern is the skills audit. Where then, I'm happy when you mentioned your relationship with Demarcation Board as an institution that also has capacity to assess capacity in terms of their mandate. But I wanted also to further maybe find out if you also do work close with the Auditor General. And I'm saying this is in terms of the laws, that because, well, maybe it's because you mentioned compliance, but I was reading a report on municipalities, and very interestingly, without finding fault, but how the Office of the Auditor General was articulating or demonstrating how they understand how municipalities are supposed to function, if they are in terms of the standards. So I'm saying, including also the biggest challenge also lies with South Africa, for instance. In what way? Because municipalities, and without any generalization, the challenge we have also, the database they use. Because if you set targets, you must have authentic information that exactly scientifically would measure your performance. And the other one is this challenge of the IDP and the costing part. Now, I'm of an opinion, Chairperson, that management in general within local government is by project management. And in that, within that arrangement, there is a need for cost analysis. And I think the IDPs, in what way can you assist, or in terms of your research unit, to like pick up a few IDPs and find out how you can comment, as you mentioned, that there is a guideline which we would like to also have a copy that will assist us as we move around. And one feel very strong, Jefferson, at this early stage, that I'm sure we will be tempted after this encounter to like identify some of the municipalities so that we benefit out of a lot that has been shared with us.
Madam Sudu, you see, you've asked 17 questions. Please don't do that next time, because if they respond to every one of them, there will be no chance to respond to any other question. Let's limit our questions, please.
Thank you, Chairperson. I also like to take this opportunity to thank the local government, CETA, for having given us the very good presentation. But what I also wanted to ask or to find out is with regard to You mentioned Nelson Mandela Metro as part of the municipality that have given you their work skills program, and when you look into those work skill program, you find that they didn't look much at the technical aspect of training. So I'm worried now. I just wanted to know, because now we've got this problem that we don't have enough engineers and people working in the technical committees, that if we are going to have such kind of a municipality not taking consideration to that aspect, in fact, where are we going to get all those engineers? And as you have indicated that you don't have the power, legal power, to maybe to change things, you still have to talk to the DPLG to find out just whether what you can you do with regard to that. And I also need to know, how long do you think that can take, because that the country is now suffering with regard to service delivery if we don't have those people. And on the other hand, I'm also concerned about this question of SDF not viewed as part of the strategic planning in most of the municipalities. And I think that, as you have mentioned here, that if those people are not part of the IDP, how are we going to, the municipalities going to realize all the result of having a very good delivery to those priorities mentioned in those IDPs, if we don't have people with the knowledge who are not part of the IDPs? And how far are we going to take this to make sure that those people are being included to be part of the process, so that everything that is put there, it is implemented? Thank you very much.
Peter?
I'll stick to two questions in the mayor. The first is whether there's any, you know, you're going to see, for example, there are all sorts of fora in terms of which municipalities communicate with each other, technical level, political level, you get city networks, you get all sorts of things, district, locals. Is there any, I mean, if you take, for example, a municipality which has sterling performance, really doing very, very well, are there any, do you see any evidence of that good practice being distributed, shared amongst its neighbours, or amongst its, amongst others that are in, that it deals with in a kind of, when it communicates with them? Or is it purely reliant on some sort of internal driven process with yourselves as outsiders helping them? I'd be interested in that. Secondly, I'm very concerned about this figure I just heard. I mean, of one employee, you know, 200 in the metro, ranging up to about 7,000 or so in sort of rural areas. Now, the question I'd have, and maybe you're the wrong people to answer, but if one looks at those very poor municipalities, they're normally, you know, 95%, 100% sometimes, depending on grant finance. And the major component of grant finance, of course, is your equitable share, and your equitable share has an institutional component, which is designed to enable municipalities to create an establishment, a staff establishment. My question would be, do you have any idea of what the content of the formula is in respect of a minimum staff establishment required in order to perform functions? Because obviously, if the only means by which you can employ people is in terms of an equitable share, which allows you to have one person when you should have 10, then there's a structural problem that has nothing to do with the municipality's ability to perform the function, is because the equitable share is not giving them the funds they require. Thanks.
Thanks, Chairperson. Chairperson, I just wanted to maybe ask, what has the CETA, what initiative has the CETA taken to rectify? I know they are speaking of human resources, having junior people who are not competent. You know, they've mentioned a lot of things that might weaken the local government in other ways. Now, what initiative have they taken to rectify the whole situation? Thank you.
Chair, thank you very much. I think some of the questions are related, so we'll try to, as much as we can, comprehend respond. The first issue, as a CETA, we try to understand what our mandate is. And thereafter we looked at what are the mandates of other institutions that deal with local government from the department. What is the department's mandate in terms of the constitution, in terms of legislation? And what is our role? So we tried to define, to say, if there are problems in local government, we have to work collaboratively. There is no single institution that has the capacity, institutional capacity or institutional knowledge or expertise necessarily to deal with this myriad of problems. And it, within that context, we have defined what our role would be. And our role is limited to ensuring that municipalities comply with skills development, but we support them to be able to implement skills development. But there is an oversight function, there is also a regulatory function. There is a regulatory function from DPLC, which we think, if we work in collaboration with them, where there are weaknesses or systemic weaknesses, either in legislation or in the institution of municipalities, they could come in there and beef up those areas. In terms of provinces, the oversight functions, we have gone to MECs. We have just reported that we've got 3 provinces on board now that have agreed to sign MOUs with us to assist us exercise oversight and to identify areas where we necessarily might not have a view in terms of sharing information and coming with an integrated approach and strategy as entities, departments, or you know, whosoever is responsible. So that's the one thing that we are doing. So we're working in that context. Where we need to leverage funds or other expertise, we would do so, and the other parties also would say what is it that they're bringing to the party. But we're not only limited to working with line departments. We also work with National Treasury around the issue of responding to the MFMA. We've developed a qualification entirely driven by the CETA. We've accredited training providers. We used the grant that the National Treasury provided to municipalities for implementing MFMA. We came with the education and training component, and we're piloting with Rest University now and AFREC in the Western Cape on those areas. And our point of departure was the areas where DPLG had identified municipalities that did not, within Project Consolidate, that did not submit the AFS, Annual Financial Statement, to the AG. And we also are taking a cue from the AG. For instance, we got the data from Northwest that only 4 municipalities out of the 25 municipalities had clean audits, for instance. Others had matters of emphasis. Others, I think 6 had qualification disclaimers. Others had a qualified audit. So working with the AG, we get that data and say, this is a problematic province. If out of 25 municipalities, only 4 have a clean audit, then we have a big problem. We also work with the IMFO, Institute of Municipal Finance Officers, in terms of the monitoring and evaluation on our behalf as an agency, but also they make an input in the development of the learning instrument. So that's as far as we can go, you know, in supporting municipalities. With respect to sharing best practice, knowledge portals, we also do liaise with the cities networks, around where they've got knowledge portals. But we have an interesting initiative now with DBSA on the LGNet. We in fact are funding LGNet because it is a good portal where municipalities can share best practice, and we are piloting that largely on the finance side, where municipalities can share information around the disclosures, the gap and the grab, which is a bit of a problem, and that information is on the IT ICT portal, and municipalities share information. So we're looking at innovative ways also of responding to the challenges, because our belief is not getting everybody to a classroom when there's an immediate problem. It's getting everybody to understand how the system works and gradually getting them into a classroom through modular training provision. And where there is no capacity constraint, then we can release people to go on protracted learning. So we're looking at a combination of solutions to get to assist municipalities. The other questions Janet will answer, but I think we could just indicate, particularly in the area of finance, we can give you statistics that indicate, and I'll get to that slide at an appropriate time, the kind of expertise that exists within municipalities around financial management. Even the competency profiles of financial managers in local government, it's shocking. The competencies of municipal managers, in some provinces it's not so bad, in other provinces it's horrible. So some of the problems is that if we employ people in strategic positions with no skills or competencies or the correct qualification, it is a recipe for disaster. And these figures, I mean, it's data that we got from municipalities, so it's not like we trying to tarnish any municipality's image. We'll give you the figures that we got from them, the data that is, give us the skills and competency profiles. We've been struggling, by the way, with councillors to get that information, but through another process we do have, we can also give you that information about the competency and skills profile of councillors.
Okay.
Just
to pick up on a few of the areas that Sidwell didn't cover, mention was made of the implications of looking at a couple of IDPs as a sort of research process, and looking at the implications of that implementation, both in terms of skill and, in a sense, a kind of skills costing. We have not actually done that yet, but thank you very much. I think that that is an extremely good idea, and perhaps this time next year, we'll actually be able to present a few case studies. So I'm actually going to take that up. Just in relation to the comments on the AG, the Auditor General, our relationship with the Auditor General is a purely formal one. The Auditor General is now beginning to look at, and this has only happened in the last 2 years, where they're beginning to look at things like, for instance, paying skills levy but not submitting worker skills plans as being fruitless expenditure. They are approaching us increasingly as the municipalities have their audits for sort of letter proof from us that the municipality has submitted workplace skills plans, evidence of the amount of levy they've received, etc., etc. So we do have that kind of very formal relationship with the AG. In terms of the, just to elaborate as well a little on the best practice and skills transfer, sort of, or the transfer of best practices between municipalities. We haven't done any formal study on the impact of that, but there is evidence that where you have particularly a good district, the level of skill planning within its constituent local municipality is much better, say, than from a neighboring district. That this obviously isn't something that happens overnight, but you see it developing over a period of years. For instance, an example of that would be Amatole District, where steadily the locals, some of which are very weak, have actually turned into really quite good examples of small municipalities' efforts at skill development. And that's not just because I'm from East London. One of the things that we are doing to support that kind of activity or concept is, as part of our discretionary grant, we've distributed an amount of 42 million rand to districts. So what has happened is that each district has received an in-principle allocation of funding from us for the implementation of either learnership skills programs, whatever, within their local municipalities, provided that they can develop an acceptable plan, framework, etc. around us. We started that initiative in September, so it's a bit easy. It's a bit early to see how far it's kind of going to make an impact. But the initial responses are positive in the sense that we've had all districts. We gave them a very tight time frame by which they should get back to us and say whether they were interested in participating or not. And we've only had, I think, about two or three districts that have said that they're not really interested or they have difficulties around participating. And that's not been so much from the district skills or HR people, but from financial offices and finances, the finance departments at district level, where they've sort of said, oh, but if we enter into a contract on behalf of our locals, then, you know. So those have been some of the reservations. There was another question as well, or an observation relating to issues around staff establishment. The short answer to that is that we currently don't have any kind of guidelines on that. However, that is a key thing that the skills audit process that we're doing in conjunction with DPLG is actually going to be looking at, is establishing those sorts of guidelines. Because the norms and standards, because quite frankly, we actually don't know. We no longer know how many people are required to maintain an untarred road, as an example. In relation to the issues around the equitable share, it is quite obvious from some of the later slides that municipalities have high staff vacancy rates, but that is not driven by finance. Municipalities do not spend their salary budgets. Now, those salary budgets are, it's questionable whether to restrict it to sort of 35% of operational expenditure as Treasury does with municipalities, whereas, for instance, in health, it's at 54%, the salary budget, and with education, it's actually at 80%. Questionable whether that 35% is sufficient, but how do you argue that when the municipalities are not spending what they've got? Again, you're talking about a national average, you're talking about an aggregate that municipalities are spending only 75% or 80% or whatever of their staff budget. So that national average is hiding huge divergences. I mean, you have some municipalities that are in fact spending 150% of their salary budget. Not correctly, however they're doing it. You have others that are spending perhaps 40%. Vacancy rates in municipalities are averaging between 35 to 38%. In some cases, like for instance, and these are long-standing vacancies. This is not just a byproduct of the elections last year. This is not just a byproduct of that sense of sort of political instability that you get within 6 months or so around election time. These are vacancies that have been there for 2, 3, 4 years. Macaulay City, for instance, has about a 40% vacancy rate. And that's across all levels. But the key thing is the bulk of those vacancies are in your elementary occupation. And those are people who actually deliver the services. The engineer designs a system. And the engineer is indeed a very important person. But the engineer does not actually deliver services. He is not the guy that goes out to dig the ditch to lay the pipe.
Why are they employing them?
I don't know.
Maybe just to add this, Chairperson, in terms of the issues right around the issue of the good practice shared by the neighboring municipalities. What we have done from the SITA side, we have come up with an hour ceremony, whereby we'll call upon them, we'll check in terms of each and every province, to look in terms of the performances of a municipal, that is the district, check in terms of the SDF, put them together to say the best one, give them some hours, and also the best performing the municipalities in terms of the areas of submission, and we also give them some certain incentives. Also, that it encourages even those that have not been nominated for the performance for the last financial year, so that in the next financial year, there's sort of some improvement. So by so doing, at least you make it a point to say there are some share of knowledge and also some certain skills between or amongst themselves.
The last question on what initiative has the SITA taken, we have answered it, but maybe the honourable member would want to know. We work with all the departments, that Department of Water Affairs, DPLG, National Treasury, and the provinces, and I forgot Western Cape, and the provinces. You'd note that with DPLG we are involved in the skills audit, we are involved in the IDP LED processes, we've done the qualifications, we're funding the implementation, in the public participation process, community-based planning, the ward committee systems, we've done the qualifications, we're funding the implementation, and of course Mr. Jack will talk about the Logola, we in the process, it has not taken off, but we also are committed to supporting DPLG in those areas, particularly around senior management, senior managers, and senior leadership in municipalities. So we are working in collaboration with all the departments.
We've got 20 minutes to our finishing time. Any other issues that you want to ask? How many slides are left?
I was just trying to do a quick calculation. There are about
19.
Half a dozen slides that I can quickly, I think, run through.
Make your pick and do so quickly.
Okay.
But leave time for discussion.
Okay. All right. Essentially, this next slide deals with the vacancies which we've been talking about. But importantly, the second bullet point.
Sorry.
I mean, second last.
Sorry, ma'am. Dr. Jack, you will comment, right? You can't come here and not say a word, right? Otherwise, where do we pay you?
Okay. But it should be noted that the sector, and again, this is just an estimate, that the sector can probably employ between 20,000 to 30,000 people immediately without needing to reshuffle budgets, they could quite literally absorb that number of people tomorrow with no financial effort. That, again, the highest proportion of vacant posts are in your less skilled positions amongst your elementary occupations, essentially your unskilled labor, and in your clerical positions. Those are key service delivery areas. You cannot talk about municipal financial viability if you do not have a clerk to post out the lights and water bill. And that is essentially what it boils down to. And municipalities, I think, are very misguided in terms of trying to save on salaries by cutting back on or freezing the appointment of people in those posts. We dealt with that. Okay, in terms of the sector profile, 28% of employees in the sector are women, and that is across all levels. District municipalities tend to be slightly better in employing women than local local do. The 2% of employees in the sector are people with disabilities, generally clustered. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Are people with disabilities generally clustered in lower level jobs? And just to add on that, although there may well be 2% of people in the sector have disabilities, they do not benefit from training. So only about 1% of people in the sector who benefit from training are people with disabilities. That 43% of employees in the sector have an NQS level 1 qualification or below. That is essentially the equivalent to more or less the end of primary school standard 6, thereabouts. This means that they are severely limited in terms of training and career passing options. Hence, the CETA has always had and maintains a focus on adult basic education and training. We have to not just recruit more people to work in municipalities, but we actually have to look after and train from within. That 5% of councillors only have a primary school qualification. And Sybil, the CEO, alluded to some of the difficulties that we have in getting councillor qualifications. These qualifications, or the qualifications profile of the councillors, are not actually drawn off the workplace skills plans that we receive, where very often that section is left blank, presumably because councillors feel a bit constrained about revealing their qualifications to a fairly junior official. No, good point. No, absolutely. No, I think that is a key. I think that's key. No.
Yeah, but I think on that point, you'd look at the section, I can't just remember the section in the MSMA that requires the portfolio, the member of the mayoral committee responsible for finance to table a budget. You know, it requires, it assumes that this member of the mayoral committee would have certain financial skills, and therefore we're doing it in that context, in the context of the job of the council, to say, what are the legal imperatives? What does the law say about the duties and responsibility? Is the councillor in a position to do that in terms of oversight, in terms of policy, in terms of, you know, and then that's where we would want information pertinent to that area. Yeah. But it doesn't also detract from the normal principles of democracy.
You want to sabotage democracy.
The point I'm making is that there's a combination of factors and criteria for becoming councillors and so on, and
Okay, that 32%, and essentially the skill profile was pulled out from research that we participated in, or essentially that we supported with, that was conducted by SALGA. They funded part of the research, and we actually funded the balance of the research. 32% of counsellors declared themselves to be in need of adult basic education, that 45% of counsellors have a secondary school qualification, and that 49% of counsellors have some form of tertiary qualification. In addition to local authorities, etc., the local government's CETA scope of coverage includes traditional leaders and leadership institutions. The local government CETA recently embarked on an extensive program to establish the level of skill of traditional leaders and to establish what traditional leaders themselves consider to be their priority training areas. Workshops were held in 7 provinces with provincial houses of traditional leaders. The local government CETA has through this workshopping process, the local government leader has identified an immediate need among traditional leaders in both local economic development and community development. Other needs identified were project management, financial management, and administration. That currently fairly large amounts of training take place within the sector, but the bulk of it is badly planned. That we are, as a theatre, we're focusing on supporting training in infrastructure, service delivery, financial viability, community participation and planning, management and leadership, and the ABEX. I think that the next two slides are kind of crucial. The last bullet point. Most of the training in the sector is currently outsourced at considerable expense, as the workplace training systems that there always were in local government and within the parastatals have essentially collapsed or remain very weak. So many municipalities still have municipal training centres, but the culture of training within municipalities appears to have broken down. And that gets back to the question which was raised about the artisans, the engineers, and the technical skills required. The issue of artisanal training in the workplace, in local authorities, needs to be supported. Those municipal training centres need to be supported, not to carry on doing some of the not necessarily very good quality training that they're doing at the moment, but they can actually begin to be effective vehicles, particularly for your hard skills, your technical skills training required by the sector. And one of the ways, quite frankly, to do that is through partnering with your old technical colleges, your FET colleges. Okay?
I think there's another constraint on that has been brought by legislation on that area in terms of the new Education Act and the new SAQA requirements, that municipalities have got to deliver programs that lead to a qualification registered on the National Qualification Framework. It means they have to revisit their systems and have workplaces that have competent assessors, mentors, coaches, and those people have got to be registered as assessor, mentor, coaches competent for that area of expertise, that occupational area. And municipalities really are not geared for that. It's a lot of, a cumbersome exercise for them. The engineers who've been training, they know what to train, they know what it is that they need. But it does not necessarily result in something that could assist a learner, progress further into other areas of learning. So it's the certificate issued by Primos, let's take in the case of Primos in Tshwane. And if it's not aligned to unit standards or not aligned to an NQF qualification, that learner cannot go to a technical next door and study further in his N3 or N4. Those are some of the issues that are cumbersome. But also it does not put us or any quality assurance body in a position to measure and to quantify the value of that training. Not that it's not good training. It may be good training, but it's just not aligned with the current system. So those are the issues that really legislation, as you see how it impacts municipalities. So they're expected to know everything, and it's pretty difficult.
Okay. I wonder. Okay. To counteract some of the weaknesses in training in the local government sector, emphasis should be placed on regenerating local government internal training capacity, particularly in relation to workplace training. But training should undoubtedly be better coordinated and planned within individual municipalities, but also, and this comes back again to the sharing of best practice type idea, better coordinated between districts and, that should have been between districts and local municipalities. That training in the sector must be focused on service delivery needs, not on this kind of generic strange stuff that you pick up on workplace skills plans. that a lot of it is, quite frankly, equipping people for careers outside of local government as a sector. And I strongly believe that as a sector, we should not actually be supporting that kind of trading. We want to support people to remain in productive employment within local government. That greater attention should be paid to the streamlining of training within local government and the public service, i.e. across all spheres of government. That compliance by municipalities with the skills development legislation must be ensured through partnerships. Okay.
Jefferson, that was the last slide. I think from this presentation, we want to say to you, this is an analysis that we do on a continuous basis. Based on this analysis, we call this our baseline. It informs us as to what interventions do we need to put in place, or what interventions do we need to undertake to respond to all these challenges. We would not just respond because somebody said there is a crisis. Yes, there will be a crisis on an ad hoc basis, but we wanted to develop a national picture of what the scenario is. We also have, we zoom in each province, a synopsis of what the picture is in each province and what type of interventions would be appropriate to respond to those challenges. So that forms our baseline. You wanted to know what is it that we're doing in response to some of these issues. I'll just at a high level indicate what we are doing. We currently are in the process of undertaking an impact study to determine what impact training has had in the last 5 years in terms of money spent, the kinds of millions we spend in dispersing back to municipalities. When we came here in October, we told you that we had just recently dispersed 169 million back to municipalities towards training. And then one would ask, why are there still problems in municipalities if 169 million was redeployed back to the sector to deal with those issues? That's the one issue. So we're going back and saying, let's check where we spent money in terms of our own programs, and programs that are funded by donors, programs that have been funded by DPLG, programs that have been funded by SALGA, programs that have been funded by other government departments. Where does this training have had impact in terms of relevance, in terms of quality, in terms of value for money, and of course where the gaps are? That's one exercise we are busy with now, Chair. Elias has alluded to what is it that we're doing to motivate municipalities to participate and to recognize effort through the SDF Awards, where we recognize the best improved workplace, the most best performing workplace, you know, the best workplace. We give them an award, and the best performing SDF, as a way of encouraging municipalities to participate. We also are busy with the LGNet. We spoke about that, to use that portal for best practice. And Janet has alluded to the 42 million rand that we've used as a catalyst to assist municipalities in giving to districts to support local participating skills development. So there are quite a number of initiatives that we have undertaken. We started in September, so it's too early to tell. Next year or later in the year, we will be able to come back and give you feedback whether those programs are bearing results. But the last one, Chair, which you would also know about, is the question of workplace training for the labor and employer component in the workplace. We're embarking on a national training program for all the workplace training committees, for union members, to understand what their role is in training in the workplace, for the employer to know what their role is in the workplace, in supporting the work of the SDF. We found that in many instances, disputes that came from the Industrial Council found their way into the workplace, and the issues of training get compromised because it becomes the package of bargaining, and hence, you know, the level of non-compliance. So we think through this initiative, people will better understand their responsibilities. We've also gone further to come up with another program with the bargaining council itself around training of labor relations practitioners in the workplaces, in all the workplaces, to try and mitigate some of the disputes at workplace level that end up escalating at the bargaining council level. So, you know, we think through these small initiatives and with partnership with stakeholders and other partners that we will eventually get there. It's not easy, Chairperson. It's a difficult process, but we can say we are comforted by the fact that we have other partners who have sought to work with us and also a reason to support our initiative. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Good day, honorable members. Just from a DPLG point of view, to confirm indeed that there is a general working relationship and collaboration in various areas regarding to the skills development and training. What is essentially important to note is that in terms of the 5-year local government strategic agenda, one of the elements of that agenda is the management and leadership accountability. And in that regard, there are various interventions that are being undertaken between ourselves and the CETA. Just to mention a few, the Local Government Leadership Academy running a municipal leadership development program. And also, you would know that last year the minister gazetted the municipal performance regulations. That work is continuing apace, as well as the development of competency profiles and framework for senior managers. We have also now developed an interim counselor competency profile. This is an exercise where we look at, because variously people will always say, what is a job description of a counselor? And as was discussed earlier on, sometimes it's difficult to know this, but we come up with a set of core competences that would necessarily be looked at in terms of counselor duties. So in that regard, there is a joint working relationship, and of course the mentioning of the skills audit that is being undertaken. We just about to initiate that skills audit after sorting out at a high level a relationship, a stakeholder relationship issues between ourselves, the CETA, the unions, and everybody, so that there is a buy-in by all concerned in that process. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Firstly, this has been a very useful presentation, as we anticipated it would be. It is very revealing of what is taking place inside municipalities in an area that is very critical. And it requires our collective cooperation to ensure that things that we agreed should happen actually happen. The compliance thing is a very important one. One of the things that I'm going to request is that I would like you, that is it well, with your team, to prepare for us material, this sort of thing, per district. I'm sure it's available in that way. That would be very helpful us, because we would like to plan interventions that are aimed at contributing to the work that you guys are doing. It's our oversight responsibility, and so we would like to do it in a way that is informed. We must sound knowledgeable. You know what I mean? Yes, I think that's the one request that we'll make to you to prepare that for us and so on. A general point I'd like to make to
about the kind of skills that are required. I agree that artisans and administrations are very critical skills. But ma'am, you would agree also that because of poor so-called soft skills, a lot of the problems can be related to the absence of those poor skills. So I suspect what David Jack is talking about, the leadership stuff. But that is also required, leadership across, inside administration as well as in the area of councillors as well. The weakness and the poverty of that area is one of the source of the big problems that we have. So that inability to handle each other as people is a key problem. So whatever hard skills we can have, in the absence of appropriate soft skills, we mess up things that shouldn't be messed up. The ILGM is calling for papers for a conference they are planning. Now, that's an interesting platform for me for the issues that you are raising here. Some of the people who are going to be there, this is the Institute of Local Government Managers. They're going to be meeting to discuss issues that affect the sector and so on. And I see this as a very important platform. Now, I would imagine you are going to be participating. If you are not, it is absolutely crucial that you raise these issues as you've done with us here very sharply. It's a very important one. But members, this is also talking about the managers and where they are operating. This is also a political issue here of deployment and so on and so on in municipalities, wherever it is happening. Who in the relationship between public representatives and officials and employment practices and so on, a very important political problem as well. The sharing of knowledge and information, I think we appreciate what you've just said here. That's very important. The public sector, the Department of Provincial, what is it called? The Department of Public Service and Administration runs an annual conference. The Learning Academy. So of officials from all the public sector coming together to discuss common issues. Now, there's one platform that I think is very crucial for the local government sector to prioritize in its work. It's a once-off thing, but it's very important. I've sat in two of them in different stages. One of them was focused on local government. So I think that's an area that requires intervention that speaks to some of these issues in a big way. It's linked to the other point I wanted to make, because I was going to ask you about reflections on the single public service story and what are the implications for what you're telling us here. So we would like to get your view about that, even if you can do it in writing. Just send us a brief on your perspectives around that issue. You are dealing with those issues strongly. I'm beginning to feel increasingly the role, Peter, you are the veteran here of the local government stories there, is becoming even more critical than perhaps we may have thought. And it's very clear that for effective provision and coordination and support for skills in local municipalities, districts are going to be having to play a very important role. How we provide support to them is another story. And how we strengthen their capacity to do that is also another story. That's crucial. And, yes, the final point I wanted to make is that I've just given you a send to you. I'll send to members here. Llewellyn, I'll send you that copy. I was invited to a conference in Madrid, in Spain, discussing capacity development. We call it "Let the Evidence Speak." This is the evidence you're talking about. And the comment you made about the SDF not participating in the discussions about implementation of the IDPs is a classical example of what that conference was about, a global conference on the weaknesses of developing HR outside of a development strategy. What meaning does it have? So in a sense, embedding capacity building inside development strategies, you think like the message partly of that contract that it seeks to do. And I think what you are illustrating there at the municipal level is the weakness of when you draw plans and you don't include in an integrated manner development capacity building, such as closing those gaps of people sorting out the mismatch and so on. So I've given you the report of that conference. I've also given you an invitation to a network which we assume you will become part of, so that you will be able to share, including areas around leadership, related to capacity building and other issues. So I thought we should, having heard what you're saying here, it's very relevant to the work that you're doing. So we hope we will be able to handle that stuff. The final issue. In the area of ABET, there's a conference coming this year. The Cubans are presenting interesting case studies there of what they've done with adult-based education. Outstanding work in a short space of time. I think there are lessons we should go and learn around that area. And the willingness of councillors who have indicated their interest in adult-based education, the intensity with which we take up that challenge. Many people up in the continent and elsewhere in the world think we often want to recreate things that others have done and perfected the skills to build with. So we need to sometimes eat humble pie and learn from others. So there are interesting examples. We are also sending you that material to look at, see if you participate in that conference and come back and tell us whether that was very useful or not. Otherwise, thank you very much. We appreciated your input, and we hope that with the collaboration with Jack and yourself,